My love, my love, just Oh, I love you. another day on the phone, hoping that you'll call home and say,
nothing's there. Don't be unhappy, can't remember. down the street, and I start to cry each time we meet. Walk on by, walk on by. Might believe that you don't see the tears, just let me grieve in private, 'cause each time I see you, I break down and cry. Walk on by. on Halloween. Love is kind of crazy with a spooky little girl like you. Spooky, spooky, oh, oh, all right. I said spooky, oh, yeah, yeah. I said spooky, yeah, yeah. Thank you.
I'll do that, Christina.
Thank you.
Thank you all for standing by. At this time, I would like to inform all parties that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you. Please go ahead.
All right. Glenn, if you'd be so kind as to take roll.
Certainly. We have Liz Williams and myself from staff on the line. Christina, we have you. Lance Griffin.
Aubrey Doria Dorian.
Kelly Smith. Michael Pelage. John Nevitt. Margie Millen, Avery Doria, and Jeff Newman.
Jeff Newman.
Excellent. Have I missed anybody?
Jeff Newman, I just
joined. Hi, Jeff.
All right. In the interest of making the best use of everyone's time, I'd like to lay out kind of the order in which I'd like to get things done in this call. And it's frankly open to only a small amount of discussion. As you all know, we're nearing the end of our work period. The final report is due Wednesday. There are still a number of principles that need to be discussed, a number of definitions that need to be agreed on, and the like. So what I would like to do is as follows. Margie was kind enough to prepare some suggested definitions and post those to the list on Friday. I was lucky enough to have a summer associate with some extra time, so had some additional kind of really just kind of tinkering changes with the idea of making the definition slightly broader for purposes of prospective use. And I've posted those to the list. What I would like to do is, at least for now and up until Wednesday, leave discussion of the definition, with the exception of one of them, to the list. In the sense that I haven't seen really any comment or any other suggestions, so what I'd like to do is really leave that incumbent on everybody to review and post any comments they have so that we are in a position Wednesday on to do a kind of thumbs up, thumbs down on a definition by definition basis. The caveat to that, and we can talk about this now or we can talk about it later, although I'm kind of inclined to say that perhaps we should just keep it in our minds for now and come back to it, is we need to have a definition of prior rights that we are all comfortable with. And what I think would also be useful for illustrative purposes is that whatever we come up with provide or contain a including but not limited to construct, in the sense that to the extent that we can come to an agreement as to what the baseline should be, then I think that would be helpful for further reference. Is anyone else getting this weird echoey?
I am.
All right. Does anybody know where that's coming from?
I asked the operator to do something.
All right. So I guess what I would like to do then is move straight into discussion of some of the principles. And what I would like to use as a guideline is the conventions that I circulated on Wednesday in terms of, quote, agreement, support, alternative view. And what I would like to try and do is, Liz, would you be able to really kind of act as scribe for purposes of determining where we are in terms of agreement, support, alternative view?
Hey, Jeff Newman, just one quick question.
Sure.
On the definitions, you have alternatives for some of them?
Right.
Why are they alternatives, and I don't understand, how is that going to be presented?
Well, basically, I thought it would be easier for people to read that, for example, where I have included an alternative definition, the alternative is the definition that I am suggesting. But I thought that it would be easier for people to read instead of doing kind of a straight red line of deleting what Margie had and replacing it with that to just kind of identify alternatives. And what we can vote on as we go forward is, you know, if people have other alternatives, then the list will become alternative A, alternative B, alternative C, and then that's what we'll vote on. Does that help?
Okay. All right.
All right. So keep in mind that we're going to be using a agreement support alternative view structure, and that we are also going to use an overlay on that, the must, should, may conventions, I believe, probably the appropriate way to phrase it, from the IETF. What I would like to do is start, and I guess let's just do these in the order that they were submitted. So, Tim, I think you were really the first one to submit principles, so let's go through them and see where we are. What I would like to do is, as we go through them, if it turns out that there is no agreement on one, the next step will be to just ask, I will ask if there are kind of word choices or word changes that could be made to that principle that would then allow us to say whether or not there is agreement, and if so, then that's what we'll do, and if not, then we'll just leave that open and perhaps, you know, to the extent that we can, circle back to it on Wednesday. So, and I guess that actually before we do that, is Victoria on the call?
No.
All right. She had felt rather strongly that since the statement of work does ask for best practices, that we should identify whether or not we are going to whether or not what we recommend should be called best practices. And I know that, Tim, you had articulated some concern about that, and my recollection, and please jump in. And is Tim on the phone?
No, not that.
Not yet? Okay. Well, then we'll circle back. We'll skip his stuff and come back then. But my recollection that Tim had articulated some concern that if we were to use best practices, that perhaps there might be a negative connotation associated with or imposed upon a registry applicant that did not, in fact, elect to use best practices. Who just joined? All right. Is anyone else of that view? And if so, are there any perhaps caveats we could put at the end of a definition of best practices that would solve that problem?
Well, actually, this is Jeff. I actually agree with Tim. I'm not sure we should call it. I think we should talk about the principles first and then figure out
what we want to call them. All right. I think then in the next order, and I think what I'm going to do, Kelly, if this is all right with you, is integrate your proposals in with mine, because I think in a way they're kind of, well, mine in the sense of what I posted. The first being that I guess if you could elaborate as to what exactly you mean with regard to selection of the process should be left up to the DTLD registry operator. Can you clarify whether or not you're saying that the decision of whether to provide one is up to the discretion, or they must provide one, and which one they provide is up to the discretion?
The latter.
Okay. So that goes, I guess, to the first principle in this chart that I put forward, that all new DTLDs must provide, I don't know the grammatically correct way to construct that, but a rights protection mechanism, or I guess A, we can start with that. Is there anybody who opposes that principle?
Say it again, please.
This is a document that I circulated, I guess, last night. The first, and I'm just going to run through them. All new DTLDs must provide a rights protection mechanism.
This way. Can I ask you this, Christine? This is Mike Palage. If you look at the 2000 proof of concept round, and if you look at the, the 2004 STLD round, there were specific provisions that said the proposed registry operator must propose how they are going to protect the rights of others, how they are going to minimize potential abuse of registration.
Right, right.
So I guess what happens is, my concern is, you talk about mechanisms here, and the mechanisms is what causes my concern, because I look at what ICANN has done to date by specifically providing for this provision in the RFP, and I just see a requiring a quote-unquote mechanism. It sounds something different than what a mechanism than a philosophy or a principle, and that's what I'm concerned with, if that makes any sense.
I mean, it does on a philosophical level. I'm not really sure how that translates to what we're trying to do here, though. Because, and let me just back up and say that the rights protection mechanism definition that I have suggested is very broad and is not kind of specific to a particular type of process. And in fact, you know, as I think my comments on the list today made clear, I include a TLD that has a eligibility verification validation process and a name selection criteria. Those are rights protection mechanisms. So I'm not really quite sure how to translate what you're saying into a principle or not.
Well, it's Mike Rosenbaum. Maybe we just copy the language from the earlier documents that you're referring to, Mike.
Yeah. As I said, I mean, it's just something that I wanted to raise because when people talk about mechanisms, right, these are the mechanisms. And if one looks back to when this group originally started, it was the Sunrise Working Group and then Protecting the Rights of Others. And I think there's a concern more over form over substance as to what pigeonhole your rights protection mechanism falls into. And instead of really focusing on what the desired result is, i.e. minimizing defensive registrations, abusive registrations, that potentially could be missed. And again, that's just something that has appeared in all the RFPs to date. So I don't want to take up any more time because we do have a tight agenda, but I just wanted to raise that. So thank you.
And this is Jeff. The other thing I want to try to avoid, I'm not saying this does it, but I don't want a registry who's got an idea going forward to be judged on their rights protection mechanism. In other words, ICANN can evaluate it and you know, maybe figure out ways to improve it or whatever, but I don't want the intellectual property constituency, the business constituency, to basically be able to vote up and down a registry proposal based solely on how they perceive the rights protection mechanism. I mean, they should be able to comment. But remember, registries are not intellectual property experts, so they'll put something forward. But I just don't – if you guys remember the 2000 round, or some of you around, it became this circus where it was the intellectual property constituency drawing matrices and evaluating people's proposals, and based solely on whether they had a sunrise or not, they voted them up or down, and the intellectual property constituency expected that ICANN would just follow that. I want to make sure that the next process – doesn't turn into that it shouldn't be evaluated on the basis of the rights protection mechanism, but that it's something that's, you know, people can comment on and improve upon when someone proposes it.
Jeff, would you be comfortable with something along the lines of that basically would say that the rights protection mechanism, and I guess we're going to get to this in a minute, and actually let's do get to that in a minute. Because what I was going to say, and this gets more to kind of the second principle, which I'm just going to number as they appear here, that, you know, the presence of one and its anticipated efficacy, I think, should be a factor in the evaluation. But I don't think would you be comfortable if we said that it should not be dispositive?
Well, I mean, it definitely shouldn't be dispositive, but you're saying it should be a factor. I mean, there should be, they have to propose one. But the efficacy, I would not, I don't think a registry should be judged on whether their proposed mechanism is going to be effective or not. I think that's a subject for negotiation. So if the expert evaluators evaluate it, and I'm assuming that there'll be intellectual property evaluators as well, if they determine that that's not going to be effective, then they should sit down with the registry and negotiate it and try to figure out something that would be effective. But I really don't even think it should be the efficacy. Again, I'm a registry. What expertise do I have on whether an intellectual property mechanism is going to be effective? I could propose something, but...
All right. Liz, what happened in the 2000 round, and this is the question I posed on the list, that if somebody just simply didn't fill out that section of protecting the rights of others, or I forget exactly what the categories, what happened?
Big mess.
Yeah, I mean, I can answer that.
Okay.
Part of the round. I mean, you had to fill out the section, which I agree you would have to in the future. And then it just became literally a free-for-all. And, you know, the intellectual property constituency came out with the matrix, and they evaluated the ones they thought were the best. But in the end, the ICANN staff pretty much ignored it.
Jeff, I just want to double-check something there. Maureen Cubley was the chair of... Are you talking about the 2000 round or 2003?
2000 proof of concept.
2000.
This is the Louis.
Okay. Okay, fine. That's, you know, 7 years ago.
Pre-Maureen.
This is 7 years ago. I think what might be helpful is to turn to the way in which the business criteria were measured in the next round. And I think that if you're proposing that... Sorry, I've got a very scratchy voice today. If you're proposing that there are some kind of business capability criteria that needs to be included to measure a capacity to run a rights protection mechanism or to protect the rights of others, that frankly is not going to be up to the thumbs up or thumbs down of the intellectual property constituency. That's going to be up to expert evaluators who are retained to provide expert advice on the whole content of an applicant's proposal.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. Go ahead.
Is this something that we need to include? I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, do we need to address that here? Do we need to get?
Well, I think when I sent my long, irritating post to the group, which was to pose different questions, I think that one of those things that you want to think about as a group is that it's actually not in the. First of all, it's not what we're looking for in the statement of work, and secondly, I think that. It would only be in the context of an implementation guideline as opposed to a hard and fast recommendation that would be included for the new TLD's report. And that's the context in which this work is being undertaken. So I think one has to be very careful about the expectations one has of where these principles might end up.
All right.
Sorry, very scratchy voice. As Glenn will attest, this has been going on for about 4 days now, so I'll minimize my talking, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Just so we can take a straw poll, because Jeff, what I'm trying to do, I don't mean to discard your concern, I'm just trying to figure out how to work it in here as to whether we need to work it into one of these or whether we need to have it as a freestanding. And I guess either way, what I would suggest is that if you could circulate some language, and then we'll make a point to discuss that on Wednesday, and to the extent that that language directly impacts whether or not we can come to a decision on, quote-unquote, a principle, then, you know, we'll just note that and move on.
Okay.
Can we do that?
Okay.
All right. I guess going back to the original principle, all new GTLDs must provide a rights protection mechanism. Let's put it this way, who objects to that? Who cannot agree to that principle?
Again, this is Jeff. It's not that I don't agree. I think doesn't the second question kind of encompass that? Each GTLD must describe how it's going to intend. I'm sorry. Each GTLD applicant must describe in its application the mechanism it intends to provide and how it will protect the rights of others.
I mean, it certainly, you know, one of the things that I tried to do was I tried to be very kind of incremental, and I didn't want a principle to presuppose another one. If that's clear. I mean, in other words, it seems to me that, yes, to a certain extent, it is implicit. The first principle is implicit in the second one, but I thought it was important that we kind of distill them out, and that, I know, comes up in some other areas here as well.
Yeah, I guess I'm fine with it. You know, I think it's the RPM is something we need to define.
Right. Oh, no, absolutely.
But with the correct definition, I don't oppose it.
Okay. So would it be accurate to say that the tentative conclusion, and of course this is all going to, we're going to go through this all again on Wednesday, is subject to a definition of RPM that can be the subject of agreement? I'm sorry, Aubrey.
I just put noise in your line. I know I'm on a noisy line, and it takes me a while to come off mute. I'm wondering whether the all and the must, in other words, I can imagine new TLDs that I know we're not using the notion of supported, but that are specific communities and may not be even as developed a notion as you're coming up with, because in their identification of who they're for, that they're already strict enough at not dealing with that or not needing to deal with that. So one can say, yes, that the definition of who the community is tight enough that one doesn't need it. So I'm wondering whether it's just possible to go with all new TLDs should provide RPM. And this should mean that in most cases, not, but there may be exceptions. And I'm going to go back on you.
Okay.
So that I'm not making noise on the line.
Okay, thank you, Aubrey. I think I'd make a note of that, Hood, because what I would like to do, frankly, is to make sure that our definition of rights protection mechanisms, personally, I think that concept encaptures a very specific supported community where eligibility is restricted, because that kind of inherently, by virtue of who can and who cannot join, you're less likely, and I think you've seen this, at least based on the summaries that have been prepared, you're less likely to. So I'll also make a note that you may want to change that to, that you've noted that we might want to change that to should. Well, let me ask this again. If we change it to new GTLDs should provide an RPM, do we have an agreement on that? If we get rid of all and change must to should?
Like Roden, but I like the existing language better.
Right.
Yeah, I do as well. If the definition would include, you know, the type of sponsored TLD issue,
Chris, okay.
I think it does.
Yeah, it's very broad.
Okay.
Christine, this is Mike Page, and sorry for sounding like an engineer here, but if it isn't broke, don't fix it. This is the language from the 2004 STLD round. And this was from Appendix A. Provide protections other than exceptions that may be applicable during the startup period for famous name and trademark owners. Provide protection. And to me, you know, instead of calling this thing right, you know, these definitions, right, let's just go back what has been used in the past, nobody complained about, and use that. Provide protections for famous name and trademark owners. That's already appeared in the RFP, and, you know, to me, it prevents us from coming up with new definitions that are only going to be construed differently by different people.
I mean, you know, I represent trademark owners. I'm fine with that. I suspect that there are others on the call who may not be.
And people that aren't, who would they be?
Anybody who believes that rights other than trademark and IP rights should be protected.
But what happens is, there's a difference between, well, and see, here's how I would argue to that. There's a difference between providing protection and granting them rights and growth. And this is one of the things that I think is significant when you look at the protections in connection with .biz. If, in fact, an applicant was able to, if a registrant was able to say, I am going to make a fair use of this domain name in connection with X, Y, and Z, that was enough. It did not mean that just because someone had a trademark that provided some, if you will, absolute right or a monopoly right in connection with the term. And I think that is the balancing. I don't think individuals civil society are opposed to trademark owners, because when you look at trademarks, they serve two purposes. One is to protect consumers. So civil society generally are in favor of trademark laws because they protect consumers. What I think civil society has concerns about is when a trademark owner seeks to exert protection in connection with a term that is deemed unreasonable. So,
All right, you know, I don't want to cut you off, but what I think we need to do is, if you would provide an alternative principle for that and post it to the list, and then we'll just make sure that we talk about it on Wednesday.
Yep.
To give everybody time to think about it, because, you know, it is a valid point why I reinvent the wheel, but I want to make sure that everybody's covered here. All right. And again, this goes to kind of what we call it. But the next principle will be each GTLD applicant must describe in its application the RPM, and again, kind of subject to whatever it is we end up calling it, it intends to provide, and how those RPM or that RPM will protect the rights of others and discourage abusive registrations. Anyone opposed?
This is John. Could we delete it at after protect the rights of others?
Yeah, this is Jeff Newman. I agree with that. I think you can never discuss, there's always going to be abusive registrations no matter what you put in place.
Okay. Is there anyone who's opposed to that suggestion?
Yes, Mike Rodenbaum opposed to that suggestion. I mean, the whole point of this is to discourage abusive registrations. That's what the RPMs need to be designed to do.
I thought the RPM is designed to protect the rights of others, right? Whether that discourages abusive registrations, I mean, there's a lot, people differ on what they think abusive registration means.
Right. The statement of work actually, unfortunately, covers both, at least in the lead-in.
And I think abusive registrations could be a little bit broader than rights of others as well. Just thinking not, you know, other than intellectual property rights that are abusive.
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. I could have a sunrise, but I don't think that's going to discourage abusive registrations.
Well, it needs to be designed to do that. I understand that every system will be gamed, but what do you do? I mean, I don't know. I think abusive registrations, minimizing abusive registrations is a concept that we've been talking about for a long time, so I think it needs to be in a principle specifically.
Well, I think that we need to define it. We need to define what is an abusive registration and agree on the definition, because that could be interpreted by too many people in very different ways.
All right, let's do this in the interest of moving forward. Mike, if you would be willing to prepare and circuit post the list a definition of abusive registration, and we'll come back to this one as well on Wednesday.
Okay.
And I really, I really don't want to take everybody's time up with these calls, but to the extent that, you know, we can make better use of the list in terms of commenting, I think it's really going to be in everyone's best interest. Moving on. Currently, there is no one-size-fits-all rights protection mechanism. And I realize that's not the most eloquent way to say that, so I'm open to suggestions.
Well, can we just eliminate the word currently?
And instead of one-size-fits-all, how about universal?
Okay.
This is Peter in Copenhagen. I've been on the call for a while. I haven't said anything yet. I just circulated a suggestion on this where I said that, however, in the event Sunrise is used, there should be a centralized outsourced standard Sunrise service provider. I think that's kind of one of the points of one of my suggestions was that whether it's not a, there's no one-size-fits-all, it would be great if we had it someplace centralized in any case.
Peter, what I was thinking about doing is if you look farther down in that list of principles, I have kind of if a new GTLD elects to use a Sunrise process as its RPM, and that's where I was going to put those types of principles, because they really, in those cases, they're really only intended to apply where after the initial decision about whether or not to use the Sunrise process.
That's fine with me.
Okay. All right. If we change it to... See, the only reason I'm reluctant to change currently, and I realize that might not be the grammatically appropriate construct, is that I would hate for someone to actually come up with something that would work across the board and have somebody point back at, you know, our principles and say, look. But I can live with that. If we change it to there is no universal RPM, does anyone oppose that? All right, looks like we have agreement. Hallelujah. All right. Moving on, if a new GTLD elects to adopt and implement an RPM that consists of eligibility or membership verification requirements and second-level name selection criteria, such as those used by the .museum, .arrow, and .travel TLDs, and then, you know, if there are others that need to go in that list, let me know, an additional RPM may not be necessary. Not should, but may not be necessary. Thank you. Anybody opposed to that?
Just a question. Does that imply to you all that additional RPMs are necessary in the case if the first two triggering events are not in existence?
I wanted to leave it very open. Liz raised the same point. In that context, for me at least, personally, I think you've got both of that. Anything above and beyond that is really kind of optional, truly. I mean, that's my personal view. Which is really, if we're going to follow this kind of ITF must, should, may construct, the may is really supposed to connote optional. Is there another way you'd like to phrase that that you might be more comfortable with?
No, I'm trying to understand what you're getting at there. And it sounds to me, the way I read it, it says essentially if the first two clauses apply, then RPMs are not necessary. Additional RPMs are not necessary. So the converse to me would be that if those two things aren't in existence, then additional RPMs are necessary.
I don't really mean the converse of it. And in fact, the reason I used wet may was to allow the TLD that if for some reason it wanted to do something else on top of that, that it would have the flexibility to do that. Liz, from your perspective historically, is the kind of converse going to be interpreted to be true here? I don't even know who's raising that point. Is that you, Jeff, or is that John?
Sorry, Christina, just asked the question again, if you don't mind.
I'm sorry. I hate to do this to you, and you should feel free to type your answer. Was that Jeff or was that John?
That was John.
Okay, John had raised a question about, you know, in this fourth principle, am I saying, or is the principle intended to say, that if you do this, nothing else is necessary? When conversely, that if you don't do this, you have to have something. And I guess my first question is that I read the must, should, may conventions to mean that, for example, that it may not be necessary. You can do it if you want,
mm-hmm.
and I guess maybe that's what John is asking.
Yeah,
but I also don't mean the converse to be true.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is really important to remember is that all of these recommendations will be subjected to the test of the constituency impact statement. And that's going to be, and I sent that around to all of the members of the GTLD's, the new GTLD's committee. So some of the people that are on this call have not received that note. And I think that part of the answer to the question is about the time that it takes to implement the policy and the financial and technical impact associated with implementing the policy. So even if we think the recommendation is a good idea, we have to have an analysis of how long it takes and what it costs to implement the policy. Just to go to the language protocol, must is an absolute, may is a question. So very much that if you're going to recommend a must, then it's going to find its way into the applicant guidelines that they need to respond to, and it's going to find its way into the contractor conditions. So if your intention is that you should do something, then expect it to find its way into not only the way in which an applicant must respond to an application for a new TLD, but that the contractor conditions that they would be bound by would have that condition associated with it. I don't know if that helps you enough. Is there anything else you needed?
No, I think that is. John, if you could identify, I guess, what exactly is the, I think I know, but it would be helpful to have you identify what your concern is, because we may be able to come up with a way to draft that eliminates your concern and still allows us to reach agreement.
Yeah, no, it sounds like the intent was, I'm perfectly comfortable with the intent of what you said, so it sounds like maybe if we could tweak the language a little bit that I understand the concern.
Right.
So, you know, let's offline take a look at it and see if we could come up with something.
All right. Would it be accurate to characterize our position on this one as tentative agreement? Is there anyone opposed? All right. And just so you know, what I will do is I will circulate a revised version of this, an updated version that kind of reflects some of the changes we talked about and has comments and notes in it. Next one, each new GTLD should adopt and implement dispute mechanisms under which a third party, and that shouldn't be hyphenated, could challenge another's use of that GTLD's RPM. Provided, however, that the challenging party must be responsible, and it should be for, whatever filing fee is charged to initiate a proceeding under that dispute mechanism. What I am trying to say here, and what the principal is trying to get at, and clearly not as concisely or clearly as it could, is that if you are going to have, for example, a sunrise process, you need to have an opportunity for people to challenge a someone's participation in that process. For example, if you're going to have a sunrise process, you have to have a sunrise challenge. If you're going to have an IP claim, you have to have a stop. That you have to have some kind of procedural and substantive check on the ability to use that RPM, basically to keep everybody honest. And that as part one requirement of that is that the party that's objecting has to bear the cost of the objection.
This is Jeff. This might be just a wording issue because I know what you're trying, your intent is, but it might be a little bit broader. You don't really want to challenge the other party's use of this system. You want to only if they prevail. So in other words, like .eu and others had sunrise processes where multiple people could apply, and you saw who else applied for those marks.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't have the right to challenge someone else that applies for it. You should only have the right to challenge someone who actually gets it.
All right.
So same thing with IP claims. You could have had 10 people file IP claims.
Right. No, you're right.
Right.
You're right.
So we just need to figure out a different way to word it. But I think the concept's okay, that there should be some challenge, there should be some mechanism to deal with disputes over who, if that RPM results in someone obtaining a registration.
Right. That's actually the exact language that I was thinking about adding on. So we would add on to challenge another's use of that GTLD's RPM to obtain, no, or that results in obtaining a domain name registration. If I make that change, are you okay with that?
I think so.
All right. I'll put that agreement tentative. All right. The next point is one that Liz correctly notes gets into kind of nitty-gritty of implementation, but it was something that I frankly had not really given much thought about until I kept seeing it over and over in kind of the proof of concept reports and the summit strategies. And if we want to just kind of toss this as being not something it's not somewhere we want to go, that's fine. But that new GTLD should accept payment for participation in RPMs by means other than credit cards. Mainly to, you know, allow participation by people in those countries in which credit cards are either not routinely used or not used at all. Comments, suggestions?
Well, this is Jeff. I'm going to throw it to John Nevitt. I mean, it's the registrars that collect the money. So.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Liz that this is much more in the implementation phase and be a principle.
Mm-hmm. All right. Does anybody care? Does anybody feel strongly that I should not take it out? Because I'm inclined to take it out, given everything on it. Aubrey, I hear you coming off mute.
This is Aubrey. Sorry, it took me so long.
That's okay.
I agree that this is too specific for a principle, but I'm wondering if there's some way to say that payment for participation in these things should be flexible to reflect, you know, the diversity of participants or something like that. So you're not telling people credit cards or how to do it, but you're basically, as a principal, saying that these things should be flexible enough to support participants from other cultures, essentially.
Right, and that's frankly what this was intended to do, and I think that was...
I'm wondering if it's possible to get something that's more principled and doesn't use a credit card.
All right.
And be flexible to somebody else.
Guys, this is Jeff again. not that I disagree with that principle. The problem is the registry is, you know, even if you look at the new team report, registries are required to use registrars, and a registry cannot really propose in its proposal some mechanism that's not supported by registrars.
Got it. I see what you're saying.
Right. So, I like the principle, but that's something that needs to go only to registrars and should not be up to the new applicant.
What is everyone's thoughts, and Liz, you can respond by email, your voice. I'm thinking that we are definitely, and this goes to some of the more detailed proposals as well, that we may want to have kind of an additional section that covers things such as kind of points that we didn't necessarily want to make principles because they were too micro, but that we thought were important to note. And similarly, that would be the section in which, to the extent that some of us have come up with detailed proposals about ways to do things, that those could go in there as well. I mean, if we were to do that, and I guess the first question is, would anyone have an objection to our doing that? All right? If we were to do that, would those of you who have concerns, and I realize that, you know, there are valid concerns on both sides of this, would it be acceptable to everyone to put it there, in that, you know, to put this type of statement in that section?
Yeah, I mean, again, this is Jeff. I would be opposed to it. Again, I'm not opposed to the principle, but in the sense that it's being used to evaluate potential registries, and it's not really something a registry. I mean,
right.
It should be it's totally something that's outside this process.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Avery, do you want to come up with some language, and maybe we can, you know, I don't know that we're actually going to have kind of like a minority work, frankly, because I'm still writing, but would you want to come up with some language?
Sorry, it took me a while again. Yeah, I mean, perhaps, and I understand what's being said, that we're asking, putting a condition on a registry that really is not there to deal with. So perhaps just listing in a comment that there is this concern that perhaps needs to be dealt with elsewhere in the process, and just leaving a note. I don't even want to go so far as to call it a minority. It's kind of like an auxiliary concern
right.
that this process brings up that needs to be noted and passed on, but I don't want to take it so far as to say it's a minority report.
Okay. All right. Then I'll just note that as my concern. All right. The next one, and this is where I think we're going to have some lively discussion. The fees charged by a GTLD for participation in its RPM must not exceed the reasonable costs directly related to the average cost on a per-participant basis of administering the RPM. And this I elaborated on, I think, as much as I could, frankly, in the note that I posted this morning. And what I'm really trying to kind of get at here is a couple things, is that first, it may in fact be the case that different classes, and I mean that just in terms of categories, of participants within a registry's RPM may, just by virtue of what rights they're relying on, the existence of different rights and the availability of mechanisms to check and filter and all the rest of it, those rights, may, in fact, create different levels of costs for different levels of participants. And as a practical matter, just using the example that was in the Summit Strategies report of national registrations, national trademark registrations, I realize this is a sweeping generalization, but it would not be unlikely for the participants who would fall within the classes for which the cost would be highest actually being placed in a situation where they're least able to afford them. And just to give you an example of what I'm actually saying is that if, for example, you have a registry that is going to limit prior rights and the rights protection mechanism to rights that are the subject of trademark registrations of national effect in countries, and it turns out that the relevant countries are countries that have completely online, up-to-date, comprehensive, reliable national trademark office databases, that is a relatively, and I don't mean to minimize it, but in terms of cost, it seems that it would cost less to do that than, for example, a rights protection mechanism that perhaps was broader to include other countries that didn't have online databases. You'd actually have to deal with documents and receipt and verification and all the rest of it, versus somebody who may be relying on a non-trademark right, and even if they had a trademark right, you know, their trademark office is, you know, 6 years behind in processing. So, and as a practical matter, that in the latter scenario where you've got kind of huge developmental, huge processing delays, you tend to be countries that are generally not as affluent. So, having said all that, I'm going to open the floor to comment on this one.
It's Jeff. I'll get in the queue. Yes.
All right, Jeff, you're first and only so far.
And I like to be in the queue, too. It's Margie.
Okay.
Collage.
All right.
We can, so, ladies first.
No, Jeff was first.
So I object to this on a number of levels. First of all, the use of the word must is objectionable, because there's no way to predict how much it's going to cost. There's no way to predict how many people are going to participate. And you know, from someone who's been involved in the launch of a number of different TLDs, there's no way, and even if you tried to guess, you'd be completely wrong. There's no way to tell how many people are going to participate. In addition, I'm not sure if you're aware, but most times people propose mechanisms, but they don't enter into contractual arrangements with the supposed providers of the service. So, for example, if you were wanted Price Waterhouse or someone else to actually do the work for you, no one will even give you a quote on how much it's going to cost until after you're actually selected, and that's a practice you're not going to change. So those relationships need to be worked out later on. And then the other point is that these are price, you know, the registry can charge a price, but the registrar can completely inflate that up to a level. You know, for example, we charged, you know, for Sunrise and DIUS, we charged, we didn't charge an extra fee, but registrar still charged, you know, a mountain above that. And you also got to keep in mind that, look, registries want to increase the number of registrations, so they don't really have an incentive to price it so high that nobody's going to actually do it. And I'm with more and more TLDs on the market, I'm becoming less and less convinced that intellectual property owners really need to buy a name in every single TLD. And I think that's evidence from some of the things in the survey where you saw a number of IP owners respond that they didn't own any .arrows or .coops or .museums or .. So, I mean, there's about 20 different levels in which I object to this statement. I'll just stop it at that.
All right. Let me just ask you very quickly, given kind of the perspective, the context in which I was trying to make the statement, is there anything that could be done to this statement that would make it something you could agree to?
The only thing I could agree to is maybe if it just had something that, you know, the fee charge should be reasonable, and then have the applicant propose why it's reasonable and explain why it's reasonable. That I'm okay with. But the rest of it, no.
All right. Margie?
My comments are actually pretty similar to Jeff's, because the registrars are the ones that actually do the charging for the defensive registrations. And on a registrar, we just don't know up front how much it's going to cost to implement a Sunrise period. And, you know, and if our profit is somehow capped at it, we may not participate at all, which I don't think really helps the people who with the prior rights. But even on a more fundamental note, I mean, this raises all kinds of antitrust issues. I don't know why we're going into price on this. As a former antitrust attorney at Pillsbury, I would just stay away from any kind of discussion on prices unless you guys really think it's important to do so. If it turns out that a registry actually makes money on a rights protection mechanism or a registrar, I don't see what's wrong with that. You know, at the end of the day, they're going to try to come up with a price that works in the marketplace, and I'm not sure ICANN should get involved in dictating what that price should be.
All right, Mike?
I think Jeff and Margie have eloquently ticked all the boxes. Again, the only thing I would reinforce is the antitrust concerns. One of
right.
the things particularly being within the registration authority community. I have always been adverse and have beat this drum for the last 7 years. We should, you know, we should not be discussing price. That's kind of a no-no. So
that's it.
All right.
This is Peter in Copenhagen. I was wondering about the general idea about outsourcing this to a centralized place and letting them decide the price. Have we discussed this or any?
We haven't gotten
totally off the. No.
Can I perhaps respond to Peter on that? Peter, when a lot of people were originally involved in drafting the original UDRP, we met in...
I was there, too.
Yes, in Georgetown. You remember that Francis had spoken about how there would need to only be one UDRP provider. And at that time, you know, I was rather passionate about there needs to be competition, and, you know, that's what ICANN was about. So I guess my concern here is if you go with sort of designating one person, that one person then potentially has market power to raise their prices, which is almost counterintuitive what you're seeking to do here.
Unless it was ICANN itself.
Well, but we had talked about this last call because I believe, or two calls ago, because somebody, and I think it might have been Victoria, had raised a concern about that. And I think the outcome was that we agreed that it would be a good idea to have a centralized service, but it could be through different providers, in much the way, same way that, you know, you've got the WIPO and NAF providing dispute resolution services, but they're all applying the same factors.
Yeah, but this, and I raised this, Jeff, I raised this the last time, that presumes Sunrise.
No, not necessarily.
Well, it would, because you can't, I mean, a central provider, you know, the only thing a central provider, the only thing there is a provider for these days is Sunrise. So I can't imagine a central provider for an IP claim service or...
A stop, yeah.
I mean, it's just, I mean, well, for dispute resolution, you could have what exists today, but for claims, and you're also discouraging a new RPM that nobody's thought of.
Well, no. I mean, and you know, I really see kind of the centralized, and let's call it a centralized repository validator instead of calling it, you know, a database or, you know, provider of the actual services. I really see this as a way, and this is just, you know, Peter's original suggestion. I mean, I see this as a way for owners of prior rights, regardless of what the rights are, to just to have to, you know, one place where they can deposit documents, and it could be one of, you know, 10 or 11 or 12 or however many, you know, entities want to participate. And, you know, those would be the entities responsible for collecting and validating the information, and those would be the entities that would, you know, be responsible for funneling it on to the registry or, you know, whatever in the context of the specific rights protection mechanism. But anyway, we can talk about that. That's different. Here's kind of the concern that I have. I understand what you're saying. And what I'm wondering then is I definitely understand the antitrust concerns. I just would hate to get into a situation where trademark owners or owners of prior rights, regardless of what the classes are kind of, you know, held hostage in the sense that, you know, some of the prices are so high, but, for example, they believe that there is a particular, there's likely to be such a demand for a particular TLD that, you know, you can say it's a matter of business choice, but as a practical matter, it ends up being virtually necessary for the trademark owners to participate.
Christine, this is Mike, and Margie, perhaps you could or you could provide some background on this. I think .name I think had one of the largest price points ever for a dispute mechanism.
Yeah, they did.
4,000 it was in the thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
As I recall, a lot of trademark owners just said no, thank you. That was probably one of the least utilized protection mechanisms. You know, and again, I think that's kind of what Jeff
and I've tried to articulate, having been through different launches, you know, you have to let the market try different things to see what works and what doesn't work and find that balance. So the concern here about a registry being able to say we're going to charge, you know, $10,000 and get into an extortion scheme, you know, a Sunrise extortion scheme, I just don't see that happening. And again, this is based upon what Jeff was saying. The more TLDs that are out there, as the survey suggests, trademark owners are just going to say no thank you to some of these TLD offerings.
All right. Well, I can see that we're not going to have any support or anything even close to that. Do any of the people who haven't spoken up have any strong objection to that coming out? All right.
Well, yes, I do. It's Mike Rodenbaum. I mean, I think I don't know why it needs to come out completely. I don't really understand the antitrust concerns about, you know, talking about costs at a very high level, at least the principle that the cost should be reasonable and somehow tied to the actual cost, I think is completely legitimate to have as a principle. I don't think that registries and registrars should be able to profit, at least not very much, from rights protection mechanisms.
I agree with Mike, and I'm wondering if there's a way we can draft to try to address the antitrust concerns. Too strong of a statement now. Can we make it?
Yeah, I think this is Jeff. I think the way you do it is you basically say the fees need to be reasonable and you keep it broad, and then you ask in the RFP, you ask the registry operator to explain why the fees are the way they are, and then it can be evaluated.
Yeah. And this, John, just so we're clear, this is a fee charged by the registry in the application, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which could, in theory, defeat the whole purpose because the registrars could jack it up.
Well, you know, we're constrained by the market. We're subject to, as a registrar, we're subject to competition. So, you know, jacking it up, as you say, is not a market-based solution.
Well, there's fees from the dispute provider, potentially from the registry, although I'm not sure exactly why, and from the registrar, right?
The registrar fee includes the registry fee.
Right.
So when we charge our customers, it would be the registry fee plus the markup, for the services that we provide.
Right. What's the registry fee, though? I mean, well, I guess it all depends on what dispute mechanism we're talking about.
You have to think of it just like a registration where we're charged $6, I guess, currently, by VeriSign, and then the market bears what the market will bear as far as, you know, which registrar you go to, which additional services you get.
Right.
So what we're talking about is the $6 fee.
Right, and Mike, in some cases, for example, in the proof of concept reports, and I know that there's one that does it, but I can't remember which one, maybe it's named, somebody actually says kind of what the wholesale cost was for a particular mechanism and what the average registrar charge was. You can kind of see that differential. And in this particular one, it's you know, pretty significant. But anyway, so
yeah,
you know, John's point is very well taken.
And as far as why there's a registry fee, I could just tell you, and you could read the biz proof of concept, but implementing the IP claim system costs a lot of money to make everything automated. And, you know, this is something that's imposed on the registries, and therefore they should be entitled to reasonable compensation.
Right, which they ought to be able to get through their registry fees, absolutely, but not by charging rights protection, rights owners to protect their rights. That's just is wrong to me.
All right. Why don't we do this? Because I want us to move on, and I don't want to cut off debate. But what I'm suggesting is that I will revise the chart to indicate the revised principle that I believe it was Jeff said, and then we can kind of circulate and talk about, and I really do want people to kind of comment over the next couple of days. All right, the next one, the prior rights on which a party bases its participation and seeks to protect in an RPM should be validated. Doesn't say when, doesn't say by whom, but just that they should be validated. Any objections?
Yes, this is Jeff. In the IP claims, that was not validated. I think it worked.
because an IP claim didn't result in a registration. So why would it matter who claimed intellectual property rights in a certain mark? If you have a sunrise where it actually grants someone a registration, then maybe that's the case, but not in a rights protection mechanism that doesn't result in a registration.
What if we changed it to say if participation in an RPM results in a domain name registration, the prior rights on which that party bases its participation should be validated?
Well, what about gives preference? If the RPM gives preference to an alleged rights owner or prior rights owner, that should be validated.
How about Peter's suggestion from this morning that prior rights must be validated in the event of a conflict? I actually agree with Jeff. I'm not sure we need to recommend they always need to be validated.
Can we say subject to validation?
Because since validation actually has a cost, I think maybe that should only happen in the event of a conflict.
Well, but again, there could be 10 people filing IP claims the way it is worked,
right,
or some where 10 people filed a claim, and then the applicant later on was notified about all 10 parties that filed a claim, and the applicant made a decision on whether it wanted to proceed or not, based on what it knows about the 10 people who claimed the name. And again, there was no reason for those 10 to validate it. It was up to the applicant, him or herself, to make that determination.
Yeah, I think there's no reason for most people to have to validate their right, honestly. It's just a cost for everybody that just doesn't want to be there.
What about, what if we toss that one and take the second, the one below it, but tinker with it? And what I'm thinking is new GTLD registry operators, and I don't know, frankly, if registry operators is the right phrasing there. I'm never really quite sure as to what should go in there. Should require validation of prior rights as a prerequisite to registration of the sought-after second-level domain name. Because that then, Jeff, would take into account the points that you had made about IP claims.
This is Peter in Copenhagen. My point, which Mike raised, has to do with the fact that these validations, where there's no conflict, it's just an added cost. I mean, the .eu validation was a farce. A lot of people didn't understand it, and a lot of people wasted a lot of time and energy validating things or trying to validate things where there was no conflict. So I think that really it has to be a validation in an area of conflict. So I think that tossing the first one and adding the second one where they should require validation as a prerequisite to getting a right where there is a conflict.
Yeah, I would just go with Peter's. I would just say go with the first one pretty much as Peter says, except deleting a few words in here. It would read, prior rights on which a party bases its participation seeks to protect in an RPM must be validated in the event of a conflict concerning the validity of the right.
Again, that just recognizes one mechanism, a sunrise. If you say...
That would be any sort of mechanism, I would think.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's no need, nor should there be, in an IP claims type system, any validation of the rights, whether a conflict or not. The only time there should be validation should be when the person taking advantage or using that RPM is given preferential treatment, either by a registration or maybe gets ahead in the queue or whatever it is. If they're given preferential treatment, then it should be validated. And I disagree with the concept of only in the event of a conflict, because then you're going to have people that are gambling as to whether there's going to be others that apply for it or not. And I don't think it's good. So let's say Coca-Cola decides not to participate in an RPM because it's just not interested in having a .whatever registration, but later it finds out that someone in a sunrise period or some preferential treatment was given their trademark. I think that's going to cause a lot of angst.
No, well, that then there is a conflict.
Right.
Yeah, but that's an after the fact conflict. And, you know, one of the things that I was trying to point out in one of the later principles is that, you know, you don't want a situation where it's just kind of clearly, if someone were to manually examine the record, they would see it was clearly false, and that you would see, I mean, I do think that if rights owners are going to want priority as to registration, I do think it is incumbent on them to prove that they're entitled to it. I mean, and maybe what we can do is, maybe this is one that we're just not going to get agreement on, and we have to do kind of agreement and support, or, you know, support, or, you know, what alternative view.
Christine, I have a question. When we're talking about validation here, what are we talking about? I mean, are we talking about that the registrant has to submit, say, the trademark number, or are we talking about the registry actively going and confirming all of that? Because, you know, maybe depending upon what our definition is, you know, people might look at this differently.
I was actually looking, what I had in mind was validation of prior rights as you had defined it.
I think I defined it as actually confirming.
Right.
Okay. And are we saying that, I guess we need to be clear whether or not we're talking about all applications or just some applications, because, you know, to address the concern about cost that was raised a little while ago, you know, clearly the .eu system involved a significant amount of cost on the registry side to implement their, you know, extensive validation. And, you know, so I just want to be clear, and whatever we decide, that it's either all or a portion, that there's no misinterpretation as to whether, you know, every single application has to be validated.
Correct.
And that actually brings up another good point. There's no way for a registry, because you want a reasonable cost, there's no way for a registry to know who's going to participate. There's no way for a registry to know when there's going to be a conflict. So, you know, registry needs to build its business model on the fact that it's going to get paid by each of the applicants.
Right. All right. I think this is one where we're not going to get agreement, but let me just make sure that I'm just gonna, if I could take a poll, so to speak. Mike R. and Peter and Kelly, I'm understanding you to say that the validation should be required only in the event of a conflict. Is that correct?
Strike for me, yes.
Peter?
Yes, and I think that we're actually in agreement here with Jeff, in any case, that the we're talking about the same thing. He just says that the conflict has nothing to do with the sunrise process itself, and I just kind of assumed that it did, but I kind of agree that there should be no validation at the Sunrise application part, just prior to registration, the actual registration of the domain name itself.
If there's a conflict.
Right.
Would you consider there to be a conflict only if you had competing applications for the same name?
Is that
what you would consider a conflict?
Yeah.
Yes. Or the conflict with the, perhaps with the existing centralized database that we're talking about?
That's, you know, as a registry, that's impossible to administer. Again, my position is...
Why is that harder than administering validation in all cases, which has been the case before?
Because it's easy to charge everyone up front. It's not easy to build a system that only charges or to validate, and only validates if there's some sort of eventual conflict. It means you can't do anything on a rolling basis. It means everything has to be done after the full application period is over. It means that registrars have to collect funds, but only to refund funds, you know, or have a process by going back to the customer afterwards to collect funds, only if there's a conflict, however
right.
That's defined. I mean, it introduces a lot of system complexities that
are just going to make it more expensive.
Very much more expensive.
I don't know. It just doesn't sound like it to me. Otherwise, it sounds to me like you're taking a validation fee that's entirely unnecessary in the vast majority of cases.
Well, I mean, no offense.
Basically,
I don't mean this in a kind of offensive way, but until you've actually run a registry and built these mechanisms, I mean, it's you've got to listen to the people that built the registries, and it's not just me. It'd be anybody that, you know, built a registry that had some rights protection mechanism. And there's a ton of complexities involved in it. And, you know, I know there's been a perception out there that the registry is taking advantage, but that's not the way it's been. But let me my position was, just so it's clear, that validation should be required for all applications in any situation where there's preferential treatment given to a rights holder, but not otherwise. That's what my position is. Anytime an applicant is given preferential treatment, that applicant should be validated.
Read, that applicant should pay more than any other applicant.
No,
not necessarily. I mean, it's that'll be part of the conflict, you know, where they're given the preferential treatment.
Well, not necessarily. In any Sunrise you're talking about, most Sunrise applications, as we've seen, the vast majority are not challenged or were not the subject of duplicate application.
Well, but look at, and no offense, Mike Talese, I know you're on the phone. Look at .info. .info did no validation, whether there was a conflict or not. And he could probably tell you, upon review, whether there was another application or not, there were some problems there with the database, with the accuracy of it, and nobody's going to be happy setting up a system where you only validate ones that have a whatever you call a conflict. If you're going to do a Sunrise now, it needs to be validated or anything that...
No one's going to be happy. I mean, the only people it sounds like they're not going to be happy is the registries, because they're not going to be able to collect nearly as many fees.
Can I hop in here? As the former chair of Working Group B, who came up with the Sunrise concept, I will acknowledge it is less than a perfect system, and over time has been subject to more and more gaming. That being said, let me try to expand on some of the comments of Mike and, Jeff. Jeff is right. The Afilias original model basically took all the data in. There was no verification. As a result, out of, I believe, the 50,000 names that were submitted, upwards of 20,000 of them were non-compliant, and those were canceled. Okay. Now, if you look at what happened in Mobi, in which I work with them in their implementation, what they did was they took in the data, and what the data was done was it was run through a series of, if you will, algorithms to, if you will, identify potential noncompliance. You know, was every application, you know, did someone sit there and say, okay, here's application XYZ, we're going to go to this national registry and pull that and then comply it? That was not necessarily done with every application. As I said, there was a series of algorithms that were run to identify non-compliant or potentially non-compliant registrations. And the reason this process was done is it was a lot more cost-effective than charging every trademark owner, if you will, 100 euros to have their trademark rights validated. And if you look, if you will, the proof in the pudding is the fact that there were a de minimis amount of Sunrise challenges that were, in fact, filed, and the, if you will, a very high majority were totally compliant. So I submit to you that you can come up with a system where there is a verification process or checking, not one-off like in .eu, but you can have a verification process that can be done to hold costs down. And again, in that situation, Mike, those costs were primarily outsourced to third parties. So, you know, there is clearly an interest in the registry holding those costs down, because for every dollar a trademark owner spends on, if you will, some type of premium service, it's probably one less dollar they're going to actually spend in a domain name registration. So that's kind of what I think are the market realities.
Can I? I'm just wondering, Mike Palais,
And I guess those of you who don't, who aren't at the point where they could support validation across the board, later on in the principles, and this was actually something that was intended to kind of go to the .info concerns, and was actually, you know, frankly drawn on something that was in the Summit Strategies report, you know, towards the bottom of the chart, it says, regardless of other validation, all new GTLD should institute measures to deter abuse of the RPMs and clearly false submissions. These measures could be automated or conducted on an ad hoc basis to focus on RPM submissions that are nonsensical or likely to be false. That is kind of, based on, Mike, on how you describe what Moby did, I mean, it sounds as if that's what they did here.
Yes, that's what they did. They used a combination of algorithms, and again, some of this as well has to do with, if you will, common sense. Clearly within the industry, there are certain registrars that cater to certain trademark owners. And, you know, it's, when you see their submissions, they generally comply with, you know, two known registrants. And if you see an upstart registrar who may have only been in business for, say, 6 months, you know, has never attended an INTA meeting and all of a sudden is claiming to represent, you know, 50 or 100 of the global 2,000 famous trademark owners, a little bell goes off there. So, you know, that's the flexibility that I think I like in that language, as opposed to something that is rigid like the .eu, which was just the EU process, which was disliked by so many people.
All right. Can we, where are we in terms of levels of agreement for this latter principle that I've just read? Is there anybody who would oppose it?
Yes, this is Jeff.
Okay.
Jeff, what could you just, in a sentence, your concerns again? They're in line with what I have said, correct?
For the most part, we're still talking about the prior rights in which a party bases its participation and seeks to protect an RPM should be validated, or as you, which sentence are we on now?
We're actually moved kind of three down? Yes, two down. It's on the second page, well, at least on mine, it's on the second page. It begins, regardless of other validation. All new GTLD should institute measures to deter abuse of the RPMs and clearly false submissions.
I guess I'm okay with that. Sorry, I thought we were still on the other one.
Okay. Well, I think what we're going to do is we're going to leave it so that we have agreement on this one, and I guess we'll just try and come up with some other language for the other one. And I'll just come up with some couple things and see where we are. We'll put it on the revise and revisit. All right, the next one. If a new GTLD elects to use a sunrise process as its RPM, and this is where we get into kind of, if you're going to do this, these are the principles that you should follow type mechanism. It should restrict eligible prior rights to those owned at least as early as, and I don't really know how to correctly describe the correct date here. I don't know if it was whether in the majority of cases the cutoff date that's been used has been the TLD application date or if it's the date of the negotiations with ICANN. Can someone help me out here? Jeff, Mike?
I could help out there. What affiliates did with the .info, application was they used the date that their application was submitted. Moby similarly used the date that their application was submitted. However, the original STLD process that was only supposed to take, quote-unquote, a couple of months actually ended up dragging out for about a year or more longer than originally intended. So in response to that, there were some feedback from industry members within the mobile community saying, we're kind of being disadvantaged here. So if you will, account it, they actually pushed back
the or push forward, depending upon your perspective, the date, allowing for more trademark owners to participate. However, the date was, if you will, kept in advance of the influx of Benelux trademarks associated with the .eu launch. So that is what, as I said, has been historically done. And I think what's important to note here is the ability to try to keep up with the people trying to game the Sunrise process. We're kind of coming to the end of the rope because Afilias had the date that it was filed, but now you have all those Benelux registrations where you have some cyber squatters that have larger trademark portfolios and some corporations, and that to me is one of the major limitations with the Sunrise going forward. So hopefully that information helps.
Yeah, and this is Jeff. I don't think there's a one size fits all here. .us, when we launched the Sunrise, it didn't matter because it was easy to validate. It just had to be a registration that was prior to the date that they submitted the application. It was much easier to do. I also think that in certain sponsored TLDs or other smaller communities, it may be easier to do that. You don't need to tie it to a date that's the application. I think .tel, who's in the process of, you know, defining it, I think they're not going to go with their application date because, as Mike said, their STLD process took 2 or 3 years or something like that. So to have it the application date is just, you know, absurd. So I think we're in another example where a one size doesn't fit all. I think the concept is that you should pick a date to minimize, I guess, abusive registrations.
Potential gaming, I think, is what you're talking
right,
about.
Right, yeah, I'm just trying to, I guess what I'm wondering is whether there's kind of language that would be broad enough so that you're not locked into one of these things, but would still give you flexibility if, for example, you know, as you point out, ICANN is totally overwhelmed because some, you know, there actually are 50,000 new GTLD applications and it takes a while to get through them all. But I don't, does anybody have suggestions about language we could use there?
This is Peter in Copenhagen. I think there's two different aspects here. The one aspect is the generic names, which I think is what we're talking about with the gaming and everything. And I think that it's true that we have all these Benelux registrations now, but I think that .nobi showed that from now on we're going to have the registries taking these premium names and auctioning them off. Am I wrong about that?
Can we stay on the Sunrise, Peter?
Sure, but
I don't think we should assume that registries are going to follow the auction model. They may, but I don't think for our process we should assume that.
And I think the point that Peter raises, it actually goes back to what Jeff and I have been saying. You allow different registries to try different processes. Again, I think one of the other options out there is for a registry to use an RFP process to potentially put these, if you will, higher valued names or higher profile names in use earlier. I just think being rigid here is probably what we want to stay away from being rigid and painting ourselves into our corner.
But Christina, that means that we could have language in there that it should have a date that's designed to just go back to the original language we were talking about at the beginning. The date of the application should be something that is designed to avoid, the abusive registrations, wherever we talked about that.
All right.
There you go. Intended to discourage abusive registration. That's where we could fit it in.
All right. Can you read back? Because I think I'm just not following how you would suggest rephrasing. Are you suggesting that we just jump that subpoint or that we revise it differently?
Well, I mean, I'll just revise it. I mean, if people think the point is important, it should say, it should, I don't know how to take this sentence, but the concept is that it should, the registry should restrict hedgeable prior rights in such a manner intended to discourage abusive registrations. Something like that. I don't know. Hard on the spot.
All right. We'll leave that one open. All right. Then the next one is, if a new GTLD elects to use a sunrise process as its RPM and second-level names are not awarded on a first-come basis, then competing applicants should be provided with an opportunity to reach an allocation decision between/among themselves. Who's laughing? Come on.
Mike DeLade.
I'm not saying, you know, it could happen.
And that, what happens there is, I just think that it looks nice. It's nice in the ivory towers, but when you get down and you roll up your sleeves and you get down into the nitty gritty of how these names are allocated, if something has value, people are going to come up with every which way to try to game that system. And I think the more rules we implement, these are just more opportunities for people to game and undermine the integrity of the process that we're trying to do here. I mean, just look at what, the 200 or 300 trademark registrations for sex in the .eu launch. You know, then you're going to be having people that will start brokering, you know, it just, no, it does not work.
We'll have cyber squatting amongst trademark owners.
Well, Pierre, wasn't this something that you had proposed, at least in a different variant?
One more time. I've heard the last part of this, but not the first part of it.
Well, isn't this what you had? Isn't this a variation on something that you had also proposed at one point? That if there's kind of multiple claimants, that they should have the opportunity to decide amongst themselves.
Yes, exactly. And it shouldn't be some kind of first come, first serve, or you know, whoever got there first, they should find it out themselves.
How about? I realize that. Mike, you think I'm being idealistic here, but does anybody oppose this if we change should be provided with may be provided, which makes it optional?
Well, I mean, the problem I would have there is, let's use Apple. Let's take a commonly used word and phrase, Apple. And let's just suppose that the record company and the computer company were still disputing their respective rights over that particular term.
Right.
The ability for those two, if you will, to say, okay, well, we're effectively going to take this term out because we have our respective trademark rights, and we ourselves are going to, if you will, black hole this string from ever appearing in use as a second-level domain in any new TLDs, as opposed to, say, an Apple Farmer Co-op or something. Again, I'm just using this as an example. You know, that's the potential problem here is you're allowing people that may qualify under their, you know, rights of others and may interfere with a legitimate fair use of that term.
Let me just back up because what I'm talking about is that this point applies only if the GTLD wants to have a sunrise process. If they don't want to have a sunrise process, it's completely irrelevant to them.
Well, let's say I want to do a sunrise, and
right,
there's just five people that apply for United, and I decide, you know what, let's auction it out. Let's see who's willing to pay the most.
Or instead of auctioning it out, suppose what happens is the registry goes and says, who's actually going to use it? Because unfortunately, there's a lot of trademark owners that all they do is they redirect it to their comm site, or worse yet, don't even allow it to resolve. So to me, if I'm a registry wanting to build a brand and an identity, the question that I'm going to be asking is, who's actually going to use this in commerce? And that to me, you know, in that situation, the registry almost has the most important right to choose between the two competing applicants, and the question they're going to be asking is, who's actually going to use it?
That's a good point.
The it's an interesting point, but I think that they're in the most case, they'd be more interested in who's going to pay the most for it.
No. Peter, there, I would tend to disagree with you. I think historically, if you look at the 2000 round, there was a lot of, if you will, land rush mentality. How can I get to 7 million names under management? I think the case has been clearly demonstrated through the 2000 round as well as the 2004 round. There are not a lot of million record TLDs out there. So I think part of the, if you will, orientation or the thinking that registries are going about is how do I build a brand or an identity? And the case that I've used repeatedly is .edu. With only 7,000 registrations, they have the second largest number of pages indexed in Google per TLD. Okay? So the ability to build a brand or an identity or a community is critical. And in doing that, making sure that those, if you will, the Class A real estate or those high-profile names actually resolve and are utilized is of paramount importance, not figuring out how to get $10,000, versus say $100 or something like that. The long-term business success is more based upon branding than it is the initial influx of cash. And again, just one final point there is with more TLDs coming out, the ability to try to extort those high fees as demonstrated in connection with the dot name will further eliminate that potential thinking or mindset.
Yeah, this is Peter in Copenhagen. Very interesting point. I haven't thought about it in that way. One thing I have thought about, though, is that if we're really going to have so many new TLDs, then the value of the existing TLDs, the existing brands, as you say, they must also be, subject to disappearing.
I don't think disappearing. I think what they need to do is they need to provide some service or benefit to their community. And again, just looking at the .cat, which I have to admit, when I first saw that application filed, I was scratching my head. But .cat now has, I believe, the most pages indexed in Google for an STLD. So they're serving a clearly identified community. There's adoption, and I think that's the important success, not the number of registrations that appear in the zone file, but is it used by the people in the community that it was intended to serve? I think that's the key thing that we're looking at.
Mike, quick question for you.
Yes.
And I don't want to. I realize that we're now at an hour and 35 minutes, so I don't want to keep everybody for much longer. From where you sit, what is the allocation method that should, in one sentence or less, that what allocation method do you personally think should be used where there is a sunrise process and competing applicants?
That's a trick question from Mike. Yeah, being a sunrise.
I guess it's a trick question, and just in the interest of disclosure here, .Asia has asked me to assist in their sunrise. And one of the things that I'm discussing with Edmund and .Asia right now is, how to look at, if you will, building upon the purposes of the sunrise, but getting more names in use. And just give me 90 seconds here. .Mobi, with their premium names, allocated upwards of 5,000 names, and the purpose behind that was to put those names in use and build goodwill to help promote the registry. The problem is, over almost 1 year after launch, 99.999% of those names have still not been allocated. So one of the things that .Asia is looking at doing is how do you get some of those names available and in use sooner? And that sooner may mean even, in fact, before the sunrise process. Again, these are different things. Now, what I can tell you, and this is some of the discussions that Asia was having with the community in Chicago last week, is they recognize that any time a name is allocated, that there needs to be some type of rights protection mechanism to allow someone who feels that their rights are being infringed to come forward and object. So that I guess the problem is it doesn't fit in the one sentence, Christina. And as registries try different things in building and gaining brand acceptance and loyalty and use, you got to be open. And that's why I generally on these calls try to oppose rigid constructs, because the only ones that benefit from rigid constructs are the people that are trying to game the system.
Mike, can we condense that answer down to notice and take down?
Well, put it this way, Mike. I'm sure we'll still be having that talk for a while, but
it's going to go on the back of the T-shirt, the front of which says, it's a questionnaire, not a survey. All right. So I think we're going to have to move on. We have no agreement on that one. The horse is truly dead. All right. Next, all prior rights to be protected in an RPM must be capable of being validated. Questions, objections, agreement? Everybody still awake?
Yeah. How is that, isn't that grouped in with all the other stuff?
Not really. Because this, to me, this when I drafted it, this was more of kind of a scope point. In other words, if you can't validate a prior right, you can't really, I mean, if it's not capable of validating it, how are you going to claim it exists?
I don't think anyone can say no to that one.
Is Peter right? All right, we're going to put that as agreement and move on. All right. Next, a centralized database for validation of prior rights should be developed. Owners of prior rights would identify the prior rights on which they would rely in an RPM, would submit the documents required to validate such prior rights, and would designate the RPM in which they desired to participate. And I'm just going to leave it as that because given where we were on the others, we're not going to get this next sentence. The last sentence is not going to get us anywhere. The idea being that there should be some kind of centralized database with multiple providers, that instead of, for example, trademark counsel and trademark owners and other owners of prior rights having to kind of every time that there's a new TLD launched, kind of reading the rules, having to make sure that they're calendaring the right deadlines so that they can get the information to their registrars and which information do I need for this one, which information do I need for that one, that it would just go into all, one centralized, well, actually it could be multiple centralized repositories that were operated by multiple providers in which, you could just basically submit your information, only have to submit it once, and then you could go back, for example, and say, I want to participate in this one, I want to participate in that one. The closest analogy from a trademark perspective that I could give would be something along the lines of, you've got your international registration under the Madrid Protocol, and then you have the opportunity, as time goes on, to say, oh, I want to extend protection to this country, I want to extend protection to that country, I don't need to resubmit my application again, the details are already there.
This is Mike. I guess I'll go first, unless there's anyone else.
No, go ahead.
Again, I just see this as being more trouble than it's worth. And a case in point, in connection with some actions I was just taking in connection with some affiliate Sunrise names from over 6 years ago, one of the facts we just noticed was, although the applicant had trademark rights at the time of the application, at the time of their application, so they were in compliance, they decided not to do their 8 and 15 and the registration was canceled. So part of this, if you will, database here, the simplicity of it is you sort of go once and then you're sort of, you're good to go. You have a path that gets you into wherever you want to go. The problem, though, is those passes may not be good for every park entrance for a couple of reasons. First, registrations may lapse. Second, as Jeff could allude to, in .us they explicitly prohibited design marks. It had only be, if you will, block text. Correct, Jeff?
That's correct.
Okay. Whereas affiliates, Mobi, and other registries have allowed, if you will, the must be identical to the textual or material element of the mark. So there are some of these, if you will, nuances and implementations that I really think undermine this idea of going and getting a one-stop verification and being able to, if you will, easily migrate from registry to registry. I think what has happened, in my experience, seeing what has taken place from affiliates through the .us, through Mobi, and now in connection with .asia, is I have seen the market response, specifically the corporate-centric registrars such as Mark Monitor, CSC, VeriSign, DBMS, Melbourne. Those companies have actually provided services where all of that information is stored, and the ability for the registry or the registrar to submit that in an orderly template actually has facilitated and increased the reliability and processing of the data. And this, in fact, goes to some of, if you will, the algorithms that I think that Mobi used to, if you will, scan the to scan the applicant. So, in summary, I think the potential benefits of this approach are do not counteract the negatives and limitations associated with it. And I think that the market has already begun to respond via services offered by registrars to provide this type of service.
This is Peter in Copenhagen. I wanted to make one point. I think I've been outside of the loop on this one point before, but the idea was not that it would be a static register, static centralized registry. The idea was that every time a new CLD would come up, you would have the opportunity to reuse the material that was already there. And in fact, that they should in fact send you an email to make sure that you were aware of the fact that there was a new CLD coming in. That if you needed to do this, you could just reuse the same documentation, in particular the PDF of the trademark registration.
And the other point that I forgot to mention is, and that we've talked about in other conversations, is that the prior rights owner would be required to validate on an, would be required to affirm on an annual basis that, its rights or that its rights were kind of valid and subsisting. In much the same way that, for example, I get an email once a year from the various registrars where I have domain names registered, and they, are saying, time to confirm that your whois data is accurate, click here. Which doesn't mean that people aren't going to gain it, but there's still going to be an affirmative obligation.
What we're trying to do is create something that the world has never been able to do. Basically, create the global trademark database. That seems a little bit
monumental.
Yeah, and political. I'm not sure the countries of the world have never been able by treaty to agree to a worldwide database, yet we're going to do one.
Can I chime in? This is Margie. As being actively involved in the Sunrise periods, I see both sides on this, and I think, although, yes, we do provide it for our customers, it sometimes is an incredible hassle. I mean, the .eu was just a nightmare trying to organize and participate in here on the Mark Monitor side, and I'm sure all our competitors would say the same thing. So I see some value in this, but maybe it's a voluntary thing as opposed to a mandatory thing. Because, and maybe, John, if you're on the line, you might comment, because I believe Network Solutions and other registrars simply just don't participate in the Sunrise process because it is so complex. And if there were an easier way of providing information during the Sunrise period, maybe they would participate. So I see some merit in this if it's a voluntary thing as opposed to a mandatory thing. Anything that is more standardized from my perspective is a little bit better, because then I don't have to come up with unique procedures for every TLD launch that goes forward.
That was the whole idea. That was you do it once and for all, put it out somewhere, and make it standardized such that the registries could just pull the information. Actually, they just get an email with when the Sunrise was finished. They just get an email of all the prior rights.
I guess my response is if there is this, if you will, flood or large influx of TLDs numbering, let's say, 10, 20, 50. What will happen is someone will come forward with a solution that will provide this because having done this with Afilias and Mobi and now with Asia, looking for the cheapest solution for a registry to get through launch and to get into steady state operations is one of their driving priorities. So if there is an economic model, I think the market will bring it forward. My concern is that this group somehow propose or dictate that a business opportunity be created. If there's money to be made and it will benefit, somebody will come forward and will offer that services to registries.
Well, yeah, but you know, why don't we give ICANN the first bite at the apple so they can, you know?
Oh, ICANN won't touch this with a 10-foot pole.
No, but I mean, you know, in much the same way that you had URID kind of outsourced to PwC, I don't see why you couldn't theoretically.
Unless there is a dramatic change in the board and the staff, which I don't see happening, I just find it highly unlikely that they would want to even open up this Pandora's box and have their name associated with it.
All right. Well, why don't we do this in the interest of brevity and sanity? I think maybe what we should do is move this as well as some of the other kind of proposals into kind of the auxiliary section that Aubrey proposed, in the sense of, you know, maybe we could just put this in and kind of additional proposals that were, you know, put forth by working group members and that, you know, the council may wish to explore further and leave it very kind of amorphous. I mean, I do think that you know, given that people have really come up with some ideas that at least from not being so involved in ICANN historically, that, you know, from where I sit at least, I think it's a great idea. I realize that there are all kinds of perhaps institutional, structural, and other types of obstacles that will prevent it from happening. But I think to a certain extent we have an obligation to throw it out there. It doesn't have to be best practice. It just has to be kind of an, oh, by the way, here's some other information that, you know, came out during the course of the working group. No reason not to pass it on. Do with it what you will. Is that all right?
Sure. I guess I'm struggling with why we're taking it out as a principle. I mean, I haven't heard any real arguments why it's a bad idea. I've only heard arguments that, well, politically it may be touchy and, you know, it's a big idea.
Well, am I correct in thinking that we don't have agreement on this point in its current form?
As I said, I have concerns, and I would have trouble supporting it, this recommendation as it currently is written.
All right. Why don't we
word it so you would support it?
Maybe you and I, you and I have to have a call. Maybe we can after this. Maybe we could come to some agreement on that.
You know, it's hard to support any kind of wording without someone looking at the feasibility of any of this stuff. And that's my biggest issue. I mean, I'd love a worldwide database as a registry. It'd be easy to implement, but...
So what's the harm of proposing the idea and then looking at the feasibility? I mean, obviously we can't do that this week, so...
Well, because I don't want it to hold up any processes. I mean, it's a long-term nice to have, but I don't think it should hold up any new TLDs from coming out. And remember, our purpose here is to provide advice to the new TLD committee so that they can incorporate it and it can eventually be incorporated in RFP. I mean, it's a nice to have, but I just don't see how it's feasible. The world hasn't ever been able to do it. I'm not sure how we will.
Well, it would be voluntary for those who want to register in the upcoming Sunrise period.
It wouldn't even have to be limited to Sunrise. It could be IP claim. It could be, frankly, any rights protection mechanism that required factual information.
It would register in this next round, and then that would work across all TLDs across successive rounds. I think it would make it easier for all stakeholders, basically. Granted, it is a big idea.
And on implementation, it actually was implemented by PwC, and their procedures were a heck of a lot more complicated than most TLD launches because they went through country-by-country analysis to figure out what was involved. You know, it's going to be that extensive of a review, you know, in these new launches, but it definitely has been implemented. And I think from a registry standpoint, if you could simplify your processes, I don't see why you guys wouldn't think it's a good idea.
So you're saying it has been implemented, which then makes PwC the default provider of this service.
Well, that's the only one that could do it. I mean, there's a lot of people that could do it, but I'm just pointing them as an example of someone who's actually done it. And they did it by analyzing the rules in all the, whatever, the 30 EU countries that participated.
Well, you would need
But what happens, Margie, is most GTLDs are not I mean, that was part of the problem that Afilias, came across, is it's not so much the developed countries, it's when you get applications from developing countries, or more specifically from certain countries where the trademark office occasionally gets blown up or overrun and needs to contact the attorneys to get copies of the files to reconstruct it. I mean, this is part of what I just...
Well, I think that's why I said mandatory versus voluntary, because in some launches it just wouldn't make any sense. But in some it might make things a lot simpler.
We're all involved.
All right, I have an idea. Why don't we continue this discussion on the list, and I will kind of, you know, put together something that unless someone else wants to take a stab at it, that kind of encompasses a lot of the concerns, or at least to the extent that we can kind of come up with more clear descriptions in a way that might eliminate some of the concerns?
On this point.
Okay.
You could try. I'll wait till you see what you come up with.
All right. Come on, Mike, you're convinced that I'm never going to want to be involved. I can't again after this. The last one was a name watch service should be developed, and that was kind of following along on a proposal that Peter had proposed about allowing people to create kind of on a subscription basis. It essentially would be kind of an amalgamation of the .name name string and the .biz IP claim, in the sense that prior rights owners could subscribe to a annual watch service in which they would receive notification when a third party was seeking to register a name that included the watch string, and that would then trigger a notification to the applicant of, you know, gee, you want the name, you know, ABC, and such company or such and such person has, you know, put a watch on this based on their ownership of the right below. So please confirm that you want to proceed with the registration.
Yeah, this is Jeff. We were going to introduce something like that for .biz. It didn't test well. The marketability was awful, even for a larger TLD like Biz, and so we didn't do it. I would not support something about should be developed. But it's just not something that tested well that people really wanted.
And Christine, this is I'm sorry, Peter. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Mike, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Peter. The only thing I would say here, Christine, is as I tried to articulate on the last point, if there is a problem and there's a market-driven solution, it will succeed. And as Jeff said, it did not succeed at the registry level. However, where these services do exist, and where I think they have been successful, is at the registrar level. The services, again, Mark Monitor, CSC, VeriSign, BBMs, those types of services that they are providing to their clients, that's where it's working. And the ability to tweak those services based upon changes in the marketplace. I've discussed with registrars their ability of how they have had to tweak their algorithms in response to domain name case testing, where things are in and out and things like this. Innovation, we have to let innovation happen and let the market drive it, not try to dictate innovation through a policy development process.
This is Peter in Copenhagen. Jeff, the question was, who didn't like this? Was it the trademark owners or the owners of the prior rights who didn't want to participate in it?
Yes. There was a market study done of people that participated in the IP claim service. Of trademarks, yes, trademark owners, yes.
Okay, because the feedback that I'm getting is that people would like it as long as it didn't allow the domain name application to resolve, as long as it went straight into a UDRP like provision. Whereas today we get these watch notices, but the things are already there, and then you have to go through the entire UDRP. This was like kind of preemptive UDRP, much like what we call, we have this opposition period within regular trademarks.
Yeah, but you're taking a $6 domain and making it into a hugely expensive process, and automated tools need to be built in. It's very complex. Very complex to actually put that in. And expensive.
All right, well, I think this is one that maybe we should put at the end in the other section. All right. I think we've made tremendous progress. What I would like to do, just to kind of recap,
Christina, it's Margie. Can I add one? I know it's kind of late, and
sure.
I'd like to get the group's thoughts on this.
Sure.
I'd like some sort of statement that if a registry chooses a standardized procedure, that there's a standard one that could be adopted across the board to minimize the cost of implementation, and it'd be purely a registry at its sole discretion. In other words, if they're starting from scratch and there's no preference as to how to do it, it'd be really nice from a registrar standpoint if they could go to this default one and to turn to, and it's only if it fits in their procedures, in their TLD approach, and if they don't have any preference for something else, just kind of like if you're starting from scratch, you have nothing, in mind, use this procedure, and we won't obviously have time to flesh that out, but it could be something that could be developed later, and I'd just like to hear, what people think of that approach.
I mean, that was originally what I was thinking was kind of the whole point of this exercise. But I think even in some of the principles that we've tried to put forward, for example, if a new GTLD elects to use a Sunrise process as its RPM, we still haven't even gotten agreement on that. So, maybe what we could do is, and I should note that I don't mean to say that this is it in terms of principles. This is just kind of what's been put forward. I am reluctant to discuss Tim's only because I have a lot of questions about what he means, and I want to make sure that he has an opportunity to explain before we kind of take a view on them. So unless someone's acting on his behalf for purposes of the call, in which case speak up, I would like to leave those for Wednesday. And I'm absolutely welcome to kind of any additional things that people would like to put forward. But I do think we need to kind of put it that anything that is put forward at this point is either complete enough from the outset or the person who wants to put it forward is willing to spend the time to flesh it out so that, by the end of our call Wednesday, we've kind of got our list and this is what we've agreed on or this is what we haven't agreed on.
Okay.
Is that okay? I mean, I hate to put a huge burden on you. I just think
no, that's fine because it is a little late. I just would be curious on the register, like Jeff and Mike, if they see any merit to something like that, or the thought just doesn't make any sense.
If you want, I'll keep this to 30 seconds. As I tried to explain with how Afilias has evolved the Sunrise with their launch, with Mobi's launch, and now Asia's launch, and it's interesting to note that in that situation, both Mobi and Asia are outsourcing their infrastructure back end with Afilias. So if, in fact, there was something that worked right, that was already canned and could easily be, if you will, utilized off the shelf, obviously there would have been an interest in affiliates trying to offer that service. However, each registry that I've been involved with has learned from past mistakes and, if you will, continually try to tweak and enhance the purpose of it. So that, to me, is why I don't see
I would have reservations with you, with your approach, because it basically will just leave the sunrise at a static state, and I think it's always important to innovate.
Okay. Oh, what about you, Jeff? Is that some more?
I'm kind of torn on this one. I think in a number of respects, I think having some sort of, as a registry, when you apply for a namespace, there's a lot of pressure on you to come up with something that's going to be accepted by the community at large. If they're, and again, as I said in the beginning, I don't think it's fair to judge a registry based on their choice of intellectual property protection model. So in one respect, I think that would be great to have something that says, here's five approved models you can follow, and you can choose any one and take it completely out of the registry's hands. But on the other hand, I see what Mike's saying too. But I do lean on the fact that if I was applying for a new TLD and I didn't know where to start and I didn't want to pay thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars to pay an attorney or an accounting firm to help me figure out a way, that I think it would be useful to have some Dell models.
Yeah, and from a registrar perspective, I don't care whether it's a .info approach, .biz approach, just as long as I'm, if it's possible to not have to recreate the wheel every time, there's a new sunrise. I mean, that's kind of the intent behind that, to have some canned thing that, maybe it's like five of them, five approaches, and it's not specific enough that, that it requires any, it has to be totally flexible where registry could choose it or not, and there's nothing wrong if they don't choose any of them. But it would just be nice to have a little more consistency, especially if we're talking about, many, many new TLDs being launched. But I'll try to, Christine, I'll try to put something on the list and see if I can, get any kind of interest in it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, at least from kind of the trademark owner side of it, I mean, that would be fantastic. That you don't have to kind of relearn the intricacies of each one every time. I just don't, and I actually spent a lot of time thinking about, is there anything that I can come up with that would be relatively non-controversial? And frankly, what I came up with and what Kelly and Peter have added, I think, is kind of the limits of what is non-controversial. For example, I don't know that there's even agreement as to whether or not you could restrict the sunrise to, if you're going to allow rights owners to participate in the sunrise based on, trademark rights, it must be ownership of a registration with national effect. I mean, I don't think you even have agreement on that, so unfortunately. All right. Just to recap very quickly, I'm going to go ahead and make some revisions in this, circulate it. You're encouraged to put forth new proposals as long as you're willing to basically flesh them out, respond to questions, and be in a position to run through them kind of definitively on Wednesday. Everybody, please take a look at the definitions. I'd like us to have kind of final definitions and be in a position on Wednesday where we're really just everybody's weighed in, and it's really just a matter of kind of running through and formalizing what is clear based on the list. And Aubrey, we didn't get to your IDN thing, and we're now at 2 hours plus. I guess the other thing is everybody could take a look at the language that Aubrey circulated and weigh in as to whether or not, A, you have an objection to the kind of idea behind it, and B, if not, whether you think we should try and distill it down to a principle, and C, if you think we should, what that principle should be. All right. Thank you, everyone. I'll talk to you all on Wednesday.
Thank you.